Thank you, Howard, and hello everyone, and thanks for tuning in. So this evening I'll be talking about the theory of alienation as Karl Marx described it 180 years ago. Along the way, I'll give examples of how alienation manifests itself today to show that it's not an abstract philosophical concept, but something which everyone experiences. Alienation is something we can relate to, which we have a connection with, which is quite ironic. So alienation can be defined as being distanced from something which we would and should otherwise have an affinity with. Marx's use of the term relates this to our labour, which is how we outwardly express who and what we are. Although this might sound a bit narrow, as work doesn't take up all of our time and energy, focusing on labour still has wider implications across the rest of our life. So, as we know, the work we do takes place in a class-divided society, where there is a class of workers who produce things and don't own the means of production, and a tiny class of owners who don't produce. Because we as workers don't own the means of production, we have to sell our labour power to the owners and produce things in exchange for wages to buy the things we need and want. The other day I saw a meme posted in the Southwest Socialist Facebook group, which sums this up quite well. And it's a short quote. The person who has to bake a loaf to buy a slice of bread is not free. And yeah, that's the end of the quote, short and sweet. So the framework we work within creates a distance between who we are and how we express ourselves in what we do. And this distance is alienation. Another way to look at alienation is as the flip side of fetishism. We could probably have a separate talk all about fetishism, which could bring in a whole new audience, although they might expect something different from Marx's philosophy if we gave it a title like that. Fetishism is to attribute qualities to a human-made object which make us think of it as transcending us or having power over us. Religion relies on this. Deities evolved from our ancestors' explanations for phenomena they didn't understand into institutionalized supernatural superbeings. A similar attitude is found in the economy, where it's usually referred to as commodity fetishism. Commodities, along with the features and structures of capitalism, like the gods, were developed by people but now have power over us. Money is the most obvious example. What we have access to is dictated by how much credit we have. When we fetishize money or anything else, we treat it as somehow higher than people, including ourselves. And this distortion of our perception is alienation. Another example of this is found in nationalism. A nationalist fetishizes the country they associate with and feels a strong bond to it, even though they probably have very little stake in it. And this is likely to mean that they feel a connection to others of the same nationality, but their worldview detaches them from people from other countries, so they're alienated from people that they perceive as foreigners. Marx's brief discussions of alienation tend to come in his early writings, especially the Economic and Philosophical Manuscripts of 1844, with a return to some of the same themes in the German Ideology, written a couple of years later with Engels. Some people would say that Marx sidelined alienation in his mature writings, when he concentrated on explaining the economic structure of society. But I prefer to think that he was carrying on his discussion about alienation, but in economic terms rather than philosophical ones. Many other writers have interpreted, critiqued and expanded upon Marx's views on alienation, such as Louis Althusser, Georgi Lukács, Theodore Adorno and Bertel Ollman. But I'll only be referring to Marx and also once to Jean-Paul Sartre. There are four types of alienation, which are described in the chapter called Estranged Labour in the Economic and Philosophical Manuscripts. And it's quite a short chapter, quite stodgy to read. There's a lot of sort of philosophical philosophical sludge, I'm tempted to say, which could have been sort of tidied up if it had been sort of edited a bit stricter. But it's reasonably easy to read if you can sort of buy into his way of explaining things. And all the Marx quotes I use, bar one, are from this section. And please excuse his and Sartre's use of male pronouns, as what is said applies to people in general. And on the subject of terminology, the word alienation is the closest translation of the German terms Marx used, and in English is usually preferred over the rather cumbersome word estrangement. The words Marx used were... I'll have to take a run-up for these because I'm not a German speaker. Entfremdung, Verausserung, and Enthauserung. The first two of these refer to property relations and the last one to personal relationships. The first type of alienation out of the four, which Marx describes, is that which exists between workers and the products made. When something is manufactured, the time and energy of the people involved turn its raw materials into a new physical product, such as a loaf of bread or a house. And in all but the most basic societies, an individual's contribution to the end product is likely to be a small part of a complicated multi-stage process. A product is labour objectified, and this applies whatever the social and economic context. This objectification is alienating when it happens in capitalism. Marx writes, and this is a quote, "The alienation of the worker in his product means not only that his labour becomes an object, an external existence, but that it exists outside him, independently, as something alien to him, and that it becomes a power on its own, confronting him. It means that the life which he has conferred on the object confronts him as something hostile and alien." End quote. Products take on this alien form to workers because the factories, mines and so on which make them, and the resources used, aren't owned by workers but by the capitalist class. This is the most fundamental way which workers are alienated from products of our labour, and it has other alienating implications. One is that products are made to maximise the profits of companies rather than being directly made to satisfy needs and wants. In other words, the product's value as something useful or enjoyable is less important than its economic value, how much it costs to make and how much it can be sold for. When we buy a product, we come to own it, but it's still alienated from us because of the context in which it was made. Marx doesn't really explain it that way in this section in the Economic and Philosophical Manuscripts, though. Instead, he expands on the notion that, quote, "The more the worker produces, the less he has to consume. The more values he creates, the more valueless, the more unworthy he becomes." End quote. Although Marx concentrates on physical products, and this is the easiest way of visualising his argument, the same applies to any outcome of a work process. So a physical product is analogous to something like a report being written or a goods delivery or providing medical care, sort of any sort of outcome of work. And this first type of alienation, alienation from the product, is the most obviously material out of the four, as it's defined by the economics of production. The other varieties of alienation have a more clear psychological aspect to them. And this means that alienation is a theory which we experience as an emotion. I'd like to sort of emphasize that. So please remember that that's sort of one of the main things I want to convey, that alienation is something we experience as an emotion rather than a dry philosophical abstract concept. Excuse me, I'll just take a swig of cider. Okay, the second type of alienation, which Marx describes, is between the worker and the work that they do. As Marx writes, quote, "If the product of labour is alienation, production itself must be active alienation, the alienation of activity, the activity of alienation," end quote. Work is alienating because in a capitalist society we have to do it in exchange for wages, and so it's not freely and voluntarily chosen. We're likely to feel particularly alienated from and in our work if it's something we don't enjoy doing. As Marx writes, the worker, quote, "does not affirm himself but denies himself, does not feel content but unhappy, does not develop freely his physical and mental energy, but mortifies his body and ruins his mind. He feels at home when he is not working, and when he is working, he does not feel at home." End quote. So to relate this to the real world today, in September, the Resolution Foundation think tank produced a report called Work Experiences, Changes in the Subjective Experience of Work. I'm going to reel off a whole load of statistics here. The statistics in the report reveal that work is overall becoming more draining and unpleasant for more people. Around 54% of workers surveyed said that they were satisfied with their jobs over the last decade, which was a drop from 59% previously. Computer's just jumped a paragraph. Oh, 1 second. So if someone is dissatisfied with their work, they're likely to find it dull, repetitive, or restrictive. And stress is another important factor. The proportion of workers who report that their job is always or often stressful has risen from 30% in 1989 to 38% in 2015. The share of employees that strongly agree that their job requires that they work very hard has increased from 30% in 1992 to 46% in 2017. And likewise, the proportion reporting that they feel used up at the end of the working day, much, most, or all of the time, has increased from 20% to 29% over the same period, with women reporting a higher rate of change than men. Dissatisfaction, stress, and overwork are likely to lead to burnout when a job becomes overwhelming and the worker risks ending up exhausted or hating what they do. Another worsening trend is that fewer workers, especially lower paid ones, are reporting that they have an involvement with changes to workplace practices. The Work Experiences report says that only 27% of low-paid workers reported in 2017 that they have a say over decisions made that alter the way that they do their job, which was a drop from 44% in the early 1990s. A higher proportion of top earners, just under 60%, say that they have an input with such decisions, which has remained constant over recent decades. And that could be quite striking in that you would assume that a top earner would have, a fair bit of influence over their job, but it's really not all that much more than half, which say that they do have an input with changes to workplace practices. And of course, that also reflects how most of sort of capitalist economic forces sort of do their thing without us or anyone being able to control them. Also worrying is that of those workers who reported that they had no say in workplace changes, the proportion of employees who believe that they should have more of an influence fell from 66% to 47% in the last couple of decades, which I think is quite a depressing statistic, in that more people feel that they don't deserve to have an influence over how their job works, how their job operates. So the capitalist framework, which we have to labour under, skews the motive of work from satisfying needs and wants to keeping the business profitable or economically viable. Work can often be unpleasant because this focus on money means that there's a tendency to cut corners and recruit as few staff as possible to minimise expenditure. But we're still alienated, even if we're lucky enough to enjoy our job roles and don't find them too stressful and have some influence over how things are run, because we're still working within the same structure. Third type of alienation is between people and what's variously called our species being, species essence, or species character. And the starting point to define this is that people are part of nature, the wider world which we rely on and live in. And although this is an obvious point, it's easy to forget that we're within nature if we live in a mechanised urban area. And as a society, we've lost a lot of the affinity to the environment which people had in previous centuries. The industrialisation which capitalism has encouraged has had a devastating effect on the natural world by squandering resources, polluting the environment, and making species extinct. But this kind of alienation from nature, although it's much more apparent now than in Marx's time, he doesn't take his argument in this direction. So he uses as a starting point our sort of place within nature. And what differentiates us from the rest of nature, says Marx, is that we are conscious. In the Economic and Philosophical Manuscripts, he writes, quote, "The whole character of a species, its species character, is contained in the character of its life activity. And free, conscious activity is man's species character," end quote. And also, another quote, "conscious life activity distinguishes man immediately from animal life activity," end quote. Since Marx's time, we've accepted that many animals are also conscious, but this isn't a problem for his theory. And he says that when animals produce things such as a nest, they're only producing for their basic needs, whereas people, of course, produce beyond our basic needs. We make things for comfort, for efficiency, for entertainment and education. And we can do this because our consciousness enables us to reflect, to want to improve, and crucially, to be creative. Although Marx doesn't elaborate on this in this section of the Economic and Philosophical Manuscripts. So, a definition of our species being is a conscious drive to be creative in the work that we do. And how we work in capitalism alienates us from our species being because it frustrates this drive. We've already seen how the emphasis on costs over needs often means that people feel stressed, bored, and powerless in their jobs. But alienation from our species being affects us on a more fundamental level. When we're alienated from our species being, we're alienated from how, what, who we could be. And one way this manifests itself is in depression. According to government statistics, around 1 in 6 adults in Britain experienced some form of depression in summer 2021. And a smaller proportion, just under 11% of people in England, were prescribed antidepressants in the 3 months to September 2020. And the numbers of antidepressant prescriptions have been increasing. And looking at rates of depression is probably the most straightforward way of measuring the extent which alienation affects us. But being alienated from our species being doesn't only impact on our well-being, but also our sense of identity. Capitalist methods of production have made people, and this is a quote and a quite familiar one, an appendage of the machine, as Marx and Engels memorably say in the Communist Manifesto. If our role in life is too tightly demarcated, such as having a repetitive job with over-strict rules, then we become more machine-like and our drive to be creative gets repressed. We come to be defined by our job role rather than being defined by our own views and choices. Existentialist philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre, in his 1943 magnum opus, Being and Nothingness, gave a memorable description of the way this can happen. So the start of the quote. The waiter in the cafe plays with his condition in order to realise it. This obligation is not different from that which is imposed on all tradesmen. Their condition is wholly one of ceremony. The public demands of them that they realise it as a ceremony. There is the dance of the grocer, of the tailor, of the auctioneer, by which they endeavour to persuade their clientele that they are nothing but a grocer, an auctioneer, a tailor. A grocer who dreams is offensive to the buyer, because such a grocer is not wholly a grocer. Society demands that he limit himself to his function as a grocer, just as the soldier at attention makes himself into a soldier thing, with a direct regard which does not see at all, which is no longer meant to see, since it is the rule and not the interest of the moment which determines the point he must fix his eyes on, the sight fixed at 10 paces. There are indeed many precautions to imprison a man in what he is, as if we lived in perpetual fear that he might escape from it, that he might break away and suddenly elude his position. I really like that quote. I've used it a couple of times, and I think it explains the situation quite well. Sartre's quote also describes the fourth type of alienation, being alienated from other workers. Our own economic circumstances in capitalism are similar to those of others, so we recognise other people not as people, but as workers. That was sort of the point of, or part of the point of what Sartre was writing. As Marx writes, quote, within the relationship of estranged labour, each man views the other in accordance with the standard and the relationship in which he finds himself as a worker, end quote. This impacts on how we relate to other people, whether consciously or not. Cooperation, of course, is needed in capitalist workplaces, otherwise nothing would ever get achieved. But capitalism also has a tendency towards individualism and division. We have to compete with other people in the labour market for the best jobs. And then once we've found a job, we make a distinction between colleagues, customers and competitors, treating people differently according to their place. And organisations are almost always run as hierarchies. So we're taught that some people are more important and more valued than others. And there are also hierarchies across job types. Many useful jobs have a low social and economic status. For example, the pandemic highlighted how staff in care homes have one of the most vital jobs that there ever could be, caring for people who can't care for themselves, but for low pay and in poor conditions. And this kind of alienation doesn't just affect how we relate to other people in the workplace. We tend to socialise with people of similar wealth levels or social standing to ourselves, and are therefore distanced from those with a different place in society. Being estranged from other people also manifests itself in dysfunctional and abusive relationships, and crimes such as muggings and assaults. Violent behaviour involves treating other people not as people, but as lesser objects. And sometimes antisocial behaviour is fuelled by a mindset such as racism, homophobia or sexism. Prejudice is a particular type of alienation which fixates on a perceived difference found in another group, and fueled by misrepresentations and long-standing power imbalances, turns that difference into an excuse for discrimination. Although some types of prejudice are gradually being eroded, others are very much enforced. The law discriminates against people by nationality, for example, as it's not legal for some foreign nationals in Britain to get work or claim benefits. Britain's exit from the European Union emphasised national boundaries, and their implications have also been in the news lately with the issue of migrants making dangerous crossings over the English Channel. Although that's completely dropped out of the news over the last week or so, whereas it was, I think the media's got bored of that and instead is turning itself to what's going on in the Conservative Party. Arguably, society has become more divisive in recent years, as have political movements. Identity politics may claim that it aims for more equality, but in practice, identity politics emphasises differences rather than class understanding and action. And a lot of these things, of course, have happened since Marx's time, but have proved his theory to be correct. And another factor which Marx wouldn't have been able to take into account is the role of the media as a mediator between people. Social media is potentially a valuable tool for connecting with other people wherever they live. And, Discord's a great example of that. But it can also be used to stir up division and hate, as is easy enough to see if you venture onto Twitter, especially. And other aspects of the media, especially the mainstream media, have commodified alienation through films and programmes with an exploitative or voyeuristic angle. And when the media glorifies violence, it further embeds alienation from other people into our outlook. So to draw to a close, the four aspects of alienation are all around us as a consequence of living and working in capitalist society. We've got so used to being alienated that we accept it as our baseline for normality, which it is. And what I'll do is I'll end on a few sort of questions which arise from what Marx has written. Because alienation is very much normalised, does this mean that it's not possible to function in capitalism in an unalienated way? A job which we find worthwhile is less alienating than one that we don't, and being sociable with colleagues is less alienating than only talking about photocopiers or spreadsheets. But as already mentioned, this still takes place in an alienating institution with strict job roles, hierarchies, and everything else that goes with it. And Marx's theories about alienation are very much centred around employment, but this isn't the only type of work. Voluntary work and domestic tasks, are they examples of non-alienated labour in capitalism? I would say that they can be, but there are no doubt arguments saying that they aren't. And what about people who aren't employed, perhaps because of their age or health issues? They're surely still alienated, probably more so, but in what way? And I haven't found anything in the economic and philosophical manuscripts which addresses this. Another question is whether the alienation that we experience in our working lives is compensated for by what we do in our spare time. Are hobbies non-alienated labour? And what about giving a talk on Discord? Has that been an alienating experience for me? I won't answer that. And how we relate to friends and family and comrades, surely that's not alienated, or is it? The extent to which we can elude alienation in capitalism is something, as I say, which perhaps we could explore in the discussion. But, and here's the last paragraph, avoiding alienation whenever we can isn't enough. And so maybe the discussion could also cover the antidote to an alienated society, which would be a socialist world. Thank you. Cheers.